This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, I'm Gary Stewart, and welcome to a special edition of East Hill Notes. We've touched on a variety of interesting topics through this show, but there hasn't been an individual whose story is more compelling than the subject of today's program. Today, we take a look at one of the great Americans, and a Cornellian too, a person who positively changed the lives of thousands of people of every age and station. Martha Van Rensselaer did so through a passionate sense of vision, justice, and empowerment for the disenfranchised, creating a legacy that drew the praise of everyone, from presidents to farm families. She has been stereotyped by many as a sort of home economic superwoman, but that was just one slice of an extraordinary life. Joining me today is Ava Danville, a class of 2009 graduate from Cornell's College of Human Ecology. Ava's field of study focused on fiber science and apparel design with a management option. Ava, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Gary. Flora Rose, Martha Van's closest associate, once said of her, "The zest of living to her was in those moments when the possibilities of the achievement she had envisioned became certainties. To others, she left the fulfillment of her dreams while she swept forward toward new goals." In 1923, Martha Van Rensselaer was awarded the Order of the Crown by King Albert of Belgium for organizing food relief programs for malnourished Belgian children. She didn't care about headlines. She wanted to do what was right for those without a voice, wherever and whenever she could. In that same year, the League of Women Voters recognized her as one of the 12 most important women in America. She thought it was a nice honor, but there was work to do. Martha Van Rensselaer's grassroots verve and vision are reflected in this 1903 correspondence from an upstate New York farm wife. "I cannot tell you what it means to me to think that somebody cares. My life is made up of men, 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 and mud, mud, mud. Send me the bulletins and remember me in your prayers."
There are too many people who don't know anything about Martha Van other than a name on a Cornell college or an auditorium in the Ithaca Women's Community Building. They don't know she was an influential public figure of her time or an advocate for rural children and urban workers. Hers is a story for the ages and an important one to tell.
Martha Van Rensselaer died of cancer in 1932 at the age of 68. Less than 2 weeks later, the cornerstone for the College of Home Economics was laid on the Cornell University campus. The building was named in her honor. At the dedication ceremony, Flora Rose said, "Martha Van Rensselaer conceived of home economics education as a means by which women's minds could be trained, their capacities released, and their deepest desires satisfied through growth and understanding. This great building will be a symbol of new and vital forces arising to meet strenuous modern problems. The value of the material benefits which it will bestow upon the people who will occupy it fade into nothingness beside the importance of the obligations it imposes upon them."
Today, home economics is human ecology, and the college and its departments have changed in ways that are nothing short of stunning. On this edition of East Hill Notes, we'll take a look at that story and a new building too. But all of it's underlined with the genius and vision of Martha Van Rensselaer, who broke new ground, made historic connections, and changed higher education and society as a whole in a way that has never been duplicated.
Martha Van Rensselaer is a very interesting person, a character, really. Born and raised in Randolph, New York, she was a real kind of middle-class, young, pious, Methodist girl. Her mother was a teacher, and they were involved with something called the Chamberlain Institute, which was a coeducational school. And I think she got a lot of her ideas from her mother, who was an avid reader, a school teacher in town, a suffragist, and also She's a member of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which is the single largest organization of American women at that time. So the thing about Martha Vann, she sounds to me to have been spunky, organized, comfortable with people, and a networker from the get-go. Martha Vann, in a way, she's discovered after her own career of school teaching, and she becomes a school commissioner. Unusual for a woman in that time, but she's popular with the farmers and the rural townsfolk, and Liberty Hyde Bailey and Anna Botsford Comstock, two important Cornellians, invite her here to participate in helping them publicize and get scientific information out to the farmers of New York State. The thing about Martha Vann is that she takes up this idea of the betterment of the home and women's role in it, but she applies science and says, look, science can improve and better the human condition from within the home, which was very much the center of her concern because she was working by this time for the College of Agriculture at Cornell. So she was concerned about farm wives. But she's saying something else. She's really saying that the moral authority and intellectual power of women can extend beyond the home. So it's a new paradigm. And she says, look, this is a viable form of collegiate study. This is not something that you just pick up from reading even the pamphlets that she was writing. The first one is called Saving Steps, and it tells the farm wife, you know, how to cut down on the amount of labor involved in her daily life so that she has time for other things to do, like read for pleasure, or spend more time with her children in a more knowledgeable way. And that's phenomenal. 1903, in the College of Agriculture, she gives, you know, the first home economics course. She doesn't have a college degree. 1907, Flora Rose comes to join her. Flora Rose is another gutsy early 20th century woman. And by 1907, they're running a home economics program within the College of Agriculture.
It was not well received at Cornell at first among some of the faculty that they should be professors. The story is that they were sort of warned, well, maybe they would not go to faculty meetings for a while. You know, this didn't go over all that well. But they stuck with it, and I think that their role as early women professors is a really great legacy.
They eventually get to be a school, but within the College of Agriculture. And it's not until 1925 that Cornell becomes the first state-supported collegiate institution, the first college of home economics in the nation. And that's because of Martha Vann Rensselaer and Flora Rose. And they set the pace. They called the cadence for what was going on in most of the land-grant universities around the country, who were also engaged in home economics for some of the very same reasons. But, you know, as early as 1923, she's voted one of the 12 most important women in the United States. And it's all tied up with how she made home economics into a viable profession, something that women could identify with. In the home, where they may have been simply mothers and wives, but also in the workplace.
Flora Rose wrote in her book called A Page of Modern Education, her description of Martha Van Rensselaer's work, and I think you also get a sense of the value of her work from this. Her understanding of their problems made women willing to share with her their homely tasks of clearing the kitchen, washing the dishes, setting the table, cooking the meal, and tending the baby. In this way, she both learned and taught many a useful lesson, a way that has never been surpassed in a more highly organized, sophisticated home economics, for it reached both student and teacher in terms of daily living. There's something in that quote that is really important for us to pay attention to understand someone like Martha Van Rensselaer. She didn't have an advanced degree. She was not a scientist. What was she? She was an educator. She was an educator that cared deeply about women. She cared deeply about rural communities, about farming as not just a business, but a way of life. She was somebody who was deeply interested in helping people to become, the phrase we use now is lifelong learners. When we look back at these early decades and the men and women like Bailey and Martha Van Rensselaer, we'll discover a spirit of engagement, a commitment to engagement, a commitment to the growth and development of ordinary people, and a commitment to keep land-grant colleges and universities close to the ground. That was a phrase that Liberty High Bailey once said. Keep the college close to the ground. How do you keep a college close to the ground? You gotta have people like Martha Van Rensselaer, who was staying overnight in farmers' houses as she was going with a horse and buggy throughout the rural communities of New York State. Now, that wasn't a waste of time. That was a way to build public trust and relationships. That was a way to learn, as you heard in that quote that I read. It was as much about her learning as it was about her teaching. And that was also important because that enabled ordinary women and men to believe they knew something. They weren't just empty vessels. They actually could contribute to the process of growth and development and education in their own communities. What happened during the 1890s with Bailey as director was not a vision of extension work as simply fixing technical problems and handing out scientific information. Bailey was adamant in his writings that that was not the central purpose of extension work, that actually the central purpose of extension work was helping ordinary folks to get a whole new perspective on life, a new vision of life, a new outlook on life, and that outlook was to be framed both by the scientific spirit, a spirit of investigation, of discovery, of learning firsthand. He wanted ordinary farmers and people to be scientists on their farms and in their communities. So for Bailey, the phrase he used was, every farmer should be awakened. So what you have here is a vision of Bailey and Martha Van Rensselaer and others at Cornell being about the work of awakening people to a new perspective on life, to a new possibility of themselves as learners, themselves as experimenters, themselves as citizens. There's a huge difference between extending, disseminating, diffusing the results of scientific research and extending or disseminating or diffusing the scientific spirit. There's a massive difference between those two things. Why is that? Because the project wasn't to create a dependency between people and agricultural colleges. The project was to awaken people to become learners, to become experimenters, to become civic-minded and engaged citizens in their communities to the best of their potential. That was the project. And it's because men and women then, just as today, are not simply concerned with their bank accounts. They're not simply concerned with the solving technical problems. They care about their kids, they care about their communities, they care about a lot of things that have to do with quality of life. People like Martha Van Rensselaer were really the ones that were exemplifying the beautiful rhetoric that Bailey was laying out in his writings. They probably were more on the front lines of actually doing this kind of awakening process in a respectful, kind of democratic way with ordinary people, and they were getting tremendous response.
Martha Vann has pushed, along with many other women, to make home economics into a, if you will, feminized service profession, like teaching, like nursing, like librarianship, like social work, also new at the time. Martha's very, very active in all of that. And she's president of the American Home Economics Association for a brief time. But as her role as a spokesperson for home economics grows, so does her professional friendship, not only with Flora Rose, who becomes her life partner and co-director of our College of Home Economics. The two of them become close personal friends of Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt made many trips to Ithaca, and whenever she came, she stayed with Martha Vann Rensselaer and Flora Rose. I've heard stories from some of the older alums and faculty of the three of them tooling around in some kind of coupe in and around Ithaca. But the point is that they had access to Eleanor Roosevelt, who would come here on a yearly basis for Farm Home Week. And it brought thousands of people to Ithaca to hear her when she was the governor's wife.
And as the years went on, Mrs. Roosevelt was a regular speaker at Farm and Home Week. And sort of interesting that as I met early on with graduates from that era, one of their clearest memories was meeting Mrs. Roosevelt and walking with her, hearing her speak, and it was extraordinarily meaningful for the students. And I liked it especially, not just that she was friends with Miss Vann Rensselaer and Miss Rose, but that students, women students, saw such a strong woman to come and speak at Farm and Home Week. Miss Vann Rensselaer was quite a force, and I think it's exciting that women students and those farmers' wives who came to Farm and Home Week were also exposed to her as a very strong woman who was not afraid to speak out and to seek support for then the department and the school. That was, I think, a positive aspect of Miss Vann Rensselaer.
And then in 1932, when the building is finally opened, unfortunately, Martha Vann Rensselaer has passed away. But the building is named for her. The Roosevelts do not attend her funeral service here, but the Hoovers send flowers, which decorate Martha Vann Rensselaer's coffin, and this is from the message sent to Flora Rose from Herbert Hoover and his wife Lou Henry Hoover. "We are shocked to learn of the sudden death of Miss Vann Rensselaer. Her passing will bring a sense of personal loss to thousands from whom her quiet devotion to every cause, looking to the well-being of children and to the enrichment of the life of women, has evoked their warm affection and their deep respect. With unerring insight, Martha Vann Rensselaer recognized that human betterment centered in the home. She therefore championed the home." And then he goes on and he mentions this, "From a basement room in Morrill Hall with an equipment of a chair or two and a small kitchen table, she saw her cause grow to the magnitude of its present importance. Her helping hand stretched to countless women on the farms, to the homes of this state and nation and beyond. The gracious messages from the White House and from all points of the country. The high honors she received at home and abroad show that the world was not blind to her supremacy in the field which she championed.
I'm continually amazed at how the voices from the 21st century echo the words of women like Martha Van Rensselaer and men like Liberty Hyde Bailey. There are echoes of those women and men in the women and men of the 21st century. The same spirit, the same articulation of what this is about, what it's for, what it means. I find the same thing. It's really remarkable.
If you think about most universities are organized by discipline. So you'll have economists working in an economics department, you'll have biologists working in a biology department, chemists working in a chemistry department. The logic of that must be that innovation in education and research is best done by people trained similarly working together and building collaborations that way. Flora Rose and Martha Van Rensselaer had a very different view. They believed in bringing people from different disciplines together around themes, believing that that's the way to get innovation in education and research. And so every one of our units is multidisciplinary. Every one of our units brings people from different disciplines together around common themes. Our five units are human development, policy analysis and management, design and environmental analysis, fiber science and apparel design, and nutritional sciences. So the way I think about it is how humans interact with their environments and how the built environment, the room that we're in, the clothes that we wear, the social environments we're in, the economic environments we're in, and the psychological environments that we're in all impact our well-being. Martha Van saw the value of multidisciplinary approach to learning, and when I ask students to think about that, they see the difference of being educated in this environment versus an environment that's structured by disciplines, much like many universities are, and that's their distinct advantage, and that's how they can summarize this college experience around the themes that they focused on, that they have a broad problem-solving approach that's practical, that's oriented towards the content and the themes that they're interested in. And if you think about any occupation, anywhere you go, it's all teamwork and problem solving.
I found that all of the majors within the College of Human Ecology put the human feel behind it. For instance, in my classes, we weren't just learning about textiles and fashion from a textbook. No, we would take trips to New York City and see how what we're learning is applied to in the real world. And everything that we've learned, you can apply to real life. What I've gained from my experience, definitely a lot of connections with people not only in the industry, but then also a lot of my peers are doing phenomenal things in different fields of study. And it's just a great connection. We really are a family. See, I have friends who are human biology, health and society majors, and they've done a lot of work and research in the different medical labs. Also for human development majors, they work closely with babies and childhood development, and some of my friends who are in design and environmental analysis, a lot of their projects involve creating facilities, working with different organizations or different groups of people to really create something that the people need. Another example, students helped design the new student lounge, which I think is phenomenal. Like, when else do you have an opportunity to really apply what you're learning to the real world? There's a student lounge and the students' names are dedicated on the plaque.
From a programmatic point of view, the new building will be a phenomenal showcase for our fiber science and apparel design program. The Department of Fiber Science and Apparel Design has become a true highlight of the college. So on the fiber science side, We have faculty working on incredibly valuable research in the area of biomedical engineering. So when you think of fibers, don't think of fibers in clothes anymore only. Think about fibers that people are using in medical research. Think about tissue engineering. We have a tissue engineering program joint with the engineering college, joint with Weill Medical College. And some of the things that this program is doing is developing artificial skin that grows rapidly, much more rapidly than natural skin for wound repair. We have faculty working on fibers that can be used to make bioengineered arteries. So for bypass surgery, instead of doing surgery on the leg and taking an artery out of the leg, an off-the-shelf bioengineered fiber product that can go right into the body, resist infection, resist scarring, those types of things. So that department is just taking off, and they're going to be housed in that new building and with all the technology, all the new labs that they need to be successful. On the apparel design side, this is one of the most fun and innovative areas in the college as well. What's really interesting is that the design students are now working with our fiber scientists in making smart clothing. And so what does smart clothing mean? Now think about fibers and clothes, and think about using nanotechnology in engineering clothes that can have in the fibers products that screen pollutants, that promote health through resisting allergens, all these types of ways you can embed in your clothing properties that help you perform both from a physical perspective and from a health perspective. So in some sense, one can think about that building as a science and design building, bringing together our design interest and our science interest. To this day, our freshman class is usually 70% women. We hope and we expect that we are leading the way in future women playing prominent roles in science. So we truly believe that we are going to be the providers of the top women in the fields of medicine, in human development, in fiber science and material science. And so what I think our college does and what Martha Rand started really feeds into why I'm so proud of what this college does and how well it trains students for their futures.